This is a CBC podcast.
CBC podcasts are supported by HP Print Studio. Express your brand with HP Print Studio. Find free, customized templates to build your business identity, like letterhead, business cards, and shipping labels. Start the journey at www.hp.ca/print.
Hello, and welcome to the Vinyl Cafe podcast. We publish a new podcast every weekend. You can download the latest or subscribe to the Vinyl Cafe podcast at cbc.ca/podcasting. This week, Dave gets a paper route.
The door to days gone by is a strange little door, and it can pop open at the oddest of moments. And when it does that, pops open, unbidden, and spills the light of memory at your feet, you know that almost always you're going to walk through the door, even though you're well aware that once you do, there is no telling the strange places you might go. Dave was alone in his record store the last time memory came calling. It was a rainy afternoon, and you could tell it was going to be slow. Dave had anything but yesterday's on his mind. He was using the rainy afternoon to flip through a couple of boxes of albums that he'd been meaning to go through for a couple of weeks now. He was firmly rooted in the here and now. He'd stopped to make a pot of tea, and he had just begun again, just picked up the very next album, and there it was, the little door of memory, and it was already way too late to do anything about it. The door was wide open, and Dave was already through it. "Oh my," he said, "Appaloosa." He hadn't seen the album for 15 years, maybe 20. Put it on, of course, and that was the end of that afternoon. Appaloosa only ever made the one album, produced by Dave's old buddy, Al Cooper. How many years since he had seen Al? Al Cooper, who had famously insinuated himself onto the studio floor during the recording of Bob Dylan's Like a Rolling Stone. Dave looked up and he realized that side one of the Appaloosa record had already been over for a couple of minutes. The needle as lost in the groove of memory as he was. That night after supper, he sat down at the computer and he spent several hours drifting around, like a little lost boat on the foggy lake of memory. Appaloosa had led him to Al. Al was leading him all over the place. Morley was already asleep by the time Dave came to bed. He was tempted to wake her, but he didn't. He waited until the next morning. Morley opened her eyes and there he was, waiting for her. He said, "Guess what I found on the net last night?" Morley sat up and squinted at him. "My gloves," she said. "A 1973 Gottlieb Deluxe Sure Shot," said Dave. "The one with a green background." "A what?" said Morley. "It was only the greatest pinball game ever made. Way better than the later version with a blue background." "It's for sale," said Dave. Only about 20 sure shots were distributed in North America. It was a game of pinball pool, set in a 20-style pool hall. Morley rolled out of bed and headed for the bathroom. Dave rolled out of bed and followed her. "Beauty of the sure shot," said Dave, "is if any of the lights burn out, you can replace them with bulbs you can pick up at a hardware store cheap." Morley said, "Imagine that." "I know," said Dave, holding out his hand for the toothpaste. He was still talking at supper, explaining how the sure shot was the game that he and Al Cooper had played the autumn they did the college tour, the one along the northeastern seaboard. They lugged the game around in the back of the sound truck and set it up backstage every night. The sure shot was bright and it was loud. "Oh, joy," said Morley. Dinner was over. They were washing the dishes now, and he was still going on about it. Morley had had enough. She put her towel down and headed into the living room. And Dave, who hadn't finished the pots yet, followed her, wiping his hands on his pants. He finally said, "I want to buy that pinball game." "No problem," said Morley. "We can pay for it out of the grocery money." Well, that shut him up. That put a damper on the fire of his enthusiasm, but it didn't put the fire out. Dave tended the embers. The idea to pay for the pinball game by getting a second job didn't flare until the next week. Came to him while he was walking to work. Now, he could have come up with the money from somewhere else. It wasn't about the money. It was about the principle. Morley was right. The pinball thing was extracurricular. So he'd get an extracurricular job to pay for it. A part-time job. David never had a part-time job. But when he's a kid, he had always wanted to be a paperboy. Big Narrows, the town where Dave grew up, the Boxer brothers had a lock on the town's one paper route. As each brother outgrew the route, they passed it on like a peerage to the next brother in line. That's when the idea came. Dave stomping along the street, grinning foolishly as the kaleidoscope of summer's past twisted through his head. He'd get a paper route. The idea of rising early to deliver papers would be like closing a circle. It'd be a return to a simpler time. It would be more than a return to a simpler time. In the midst of his busy life, it would be like one of those things that monks did, like bookbinding or bread making. It would be his meditation. It'd be his practice. It wouldn't be his role to deliver the papers. The natural state of the papers was on the front porches. Dave's contribution would be to release the papers so they could deliver themselves. The paper route would bring patience into his life, not to mention a pinball game. He called the paper that afternoon. They had a route in his neighborhood. He could start Monday morning. It was only after he had hung up that he realized the best thing of all. By doing this, Dave was going to be setting an example for his children. He'd be living a principle that he'd always tried to teach them. The important principle of delayed pleasure. If you wanted something, you had to earn it before you could enjoy it. He sat down to talk to Sam that Sunday night. When he finished explaining everything, he sat back and he smiled. Sam said, "You're going to deliver papers so you can buy a pinball machine, right?" Dave smiled. "Yeah, that's right." Sam said, "That is so embarrassing." The next morning, his first on the job, Dave woke up 5 minutes before the alarm went off. It was still dark out. He reached out and he turned off the alarm before it rang so it wouldn't wake Morley. He had laid out his clothes the night before, his green sweatshirt, beige spring jacket, a pair of sandals. He figured the sandals would force him to move slowly. He whispered into the kitchen and boiled water for tea. Slowly. Filled a stainless steel thermos with the tea and added milk. Slowly. He was moving like a monk. He was supposed to pick up his papers at Lawler's drugstore, and when he got there, he would sit quietly and drink his tea before he set off. Well, when he arrived at Lawler's, he was surprised to find he was not alone. There was a man there already, throwing stacks of newspapers into the back of a little red car. This man was moving quickly, urgently, actually, loading hundreds of papers into his car. Driver's door was open and the tape machine was playing some kind of Asian music. Man was small and dark-haired. He heaved the last bundle onto the passenger seat. He leaned over and snipped the bundle open with a pair of wire clippers. And then he nodded curtly at Dave and he jumped into his car and he peeled off. There were two small packs of papers left. Dave figured they must be his piles. They were bound together with wire. No one had said anything about wire. Dave tried to work the pile open with his hands. No one could have broken open the pile with their hands. So Dave ran home, or he tried to run home. It's hard running when you're wearing monk's sandals. He sort of skipped home, bounding down the street like a beast being pursued across the African veldt. It was almost noon before Dave finished his paper route. When he got to work, he got a call from the circulation department. "We received two late complaints," said the lady. "One from number 54 and one from number 50. Dave checked his list. Number 54 was his neighborhood nemesis, Mary Turlington. Number 50 was his house. Morley had phoned in a complaint. Dave was determined to get better at this. He decided he needed practice delivering the papers. He rolled them into cylinders. He used elastic bands to secure them. He took them out to the backyard, and he practiced throwing the papers at a box that he stuck at the far end of the yard. Smiling every time, he made a direct hit, working in the zone until Sam came outside and said, "Couldn't you wait until the sun goes down? I have a reputation, you know." Thursday morning was as perfect as a morning could be. The sky was warm and blue and dotted with quiet clouds. And Dave was pulling his wagon along the sidewalk happily, stopping every time he had a paper to toss. But his release was off. Tosses were falling short. He put more muscle into the next toss, and it was short too. So at the next house, he eyeballed the door, standing on the sidewalk trying to visualize his throw the way athletes do. And then he cocked his arm back like a discus thrower, and he let the paper fly, following through his eyes on the paper as it soared through the air, over the front lawn, past the stairs. And he's wondering how come the front door is opening as he's watching in disbelief. As the door opens wide and his paper smacks Mary Turlington right in the face. Things just weren't working out the way he had imagined. His mornings were rushed, not relaxing. His feet were sore, his shoulders were aching. And worse, he was doing a lousy job. Each day, the silent, swift-moving Asian guy was a reminder of that. And then one morning, the papers weren't there. Dave got to Lawler's, and the Asian guy was sitting on the sidewalk in Lawler's doorway. He held up his cell phone and he said, "Printing problem. No papers for an hour." Dave wasn't sure what he should do. The guy said, "You want to go for coffee?" Dave hadn't expected that. Man's name was Ton Tron. He was from Vietnam. "Ton," said Dave, "or Tron?" "Ton," said the man, waving his hand over his head. "It means the color of the sky." Dave followed his arm across the sky. It was a beautiful morning. White clouds congregating over the city like a pack of puffy elephants. They walked to Kenny Wong's cafe, and all they saw along the way was one taxi and a bread truck. They crossed the street wherever they wanted without even looking. They ordered eggs and toast and orange juice and coffee. Dave knows all the stories of the Vietnamese boat people. The fearsome crossing of the South China Sea, the leaky, terrifyingly crowded boats, the typhoons, the Thai pirates, the corrupt refugee camps. So he didn't ask how Ton had made it to Canada. Instead, he said, "What did you used to do in your country?" Ton told Dave he'd been a doctor in Vietnam. "Here," he said, "I'm not able to practice." He said it without rancor or even frustration. He said it like it was just the way it was. He said he had two jobs. He worked days in a restaurant and nights as a cleaner. "Three jobs then," said Dave. "Two," said Ton, counting them off on his fingers. "One, restaurant; two, cleaner." "And three," said Dave, "the papers. The papers make three." "Papers, not real jobs," said Ton. He was smiling. "I do papers on the way to the restaurant." Then he said, "How many jobs do you have?" "We are, all of us, ultimately insignificant in the turning of this old world. But mostly, as the world turns, we're too busy to face the truth of the thing. Dave took in a deep breath. He felt suddenly foolish, felt juvenile. He felt diminished sitting in front of this quiet man. "Hardly one job," he said. I own a little record store." "You do papers on the way to the store?" said Ton. Just for a while," said Dave, "just for a couple of months, until I can buy something." "Me too," said Ton. "I want to buy a new washing machine and dryer for my wife. Then maybe a new fridge." Dave took in a deep breath. "I want to buy a pinball game," he said. "What?" said Ton. "A pinball game," said Dave. Ton obviously didn't know what he was talking about. Dave was tempted to let that go, but if this guy deserved anything, he deserved the truth. How to explain this? He held his arms out in front of him as if he was working the flippers. A machine," he said, "a game, there's a ball and a..." "I know pinball," said Ton. "Oh," said Dave. David misinterpreted the look on Ton's face. Ton wasn't confused, he was disappointed. Dave said, "It's just a game." Ton said, I know, what game?" "Oh," said Dave, "it's called the Sure Shot. It's a game like pool where blue or green background," said Ton. And in that moment, right then, right there, they became friends. Sitting there in the booth of Kenny Wong's cafe on that beautiful and soft morning before anybody else was up, they talked about music. "Blood, Sweat, and Tears," said Ton, "my favorite group." It was Al Cooper's band. Al Cooper had put Blood, Sweat, and Tears together. The game arrived 3 months later on a truck from Indianapolis. It came on a Thursday, but Dave waited for Sunday to set it up, when the record store wasn't open for business and Ton wasn't working either. Delayed pleasure. Is there any better? He invited Ton and his family to the store. Morley and Sam joined them. They ordered dinner, and then everyone played the Sure Shot. Dave and Ton had the first games, and they were both horrible. Tilting the machine all over the place, completely blowing games. "I thought you said you were good," said Ton. "Ah," said Dave, "once. It'll take a while to get the feel back." He'd always thought that the thrill of pinball was being in the zone, playing well, getting the game lit up like a Christmas tree. But pinball never made him as happy as that Sunday evening, sitting in his store with Ton Tron and his wife as they passed around boxes of Kenny Wong's crispy salt cod. His son, Sam, leaning against the machine, watching Ton's 12-year-old daughter, Sarah, pulling the plunger back and putting a ball into play. Sam was staring at Sarah's face, not the game. Flashing lights and clunking bells, and best of all, laughter filling Dave's little store. Thank you very much.
Thank you. That's Stuart McLean, and that's from the Vinyl Cafe. Stuart McLean and the Vinyl Cafe will be heading out on tour this autumn. They'll be doing live Vinyl Cafe concerts in British Columbia, Ontario, Quebec, and the United States. They'll be making stops in Kelowna, Nanaimo, Duncan, Trail, Vernon, Prince George, Terrace, Kamloops, Abbotsford, Montreal, Kingston, Huntsville, North Bay, Sudbury, Chatham, Indianapolis, Indiana, Cleveland, Ohio, Mount Clemens, Michigan, and Seattle, Washington. You can log on to the Vinyl Cafe website for a complete list of shows. You can find the Vinyl Cafe on the web at vinylcafe.com.
For more on all of our CBC podcasts, head to cbc.ca/podcasting.